the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verses 9 to 11 of chapter Hud from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Sayyid Ahmad Mirzadeh Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَلَئِنْ أَذَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ مِنَّا رَحْمَةً ثُمَّ نَزَعْنَاهَا مِنْهُ لئن أذقناه نعماء بعد ضراء مسته ليقولن ذهب السيئات عني إنه لفرح فخور إلا الذين صبروا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك لهم مغفرة وأجر كبير إلا الذين صبروا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك لهم مغفرة وأجر كبير. صدق الله العلي.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. And if we make man taste mercy from us, then take it off from him, most surely he is despairing, ungrateful. And if we make him taste a favor after distress has afflicted him, he will certainly say, "The evils are gone away from me." Most surely, he is exulting, boasting. Except those who are patient and do good. They shall have forgiveness and a great reward.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Our headlines: the Afghan government and a group of political leaders agree to form a joint command center for public uprising forces in the fight against the Taliban. North Korea warns that South Korea and the U.S. will face greater security threats for going ahead with their scheduled joint military drills. Also, coronavirus cases and hospitalizations in the U.S., fueled by the rapid spread of the Delta variant, jumped to their highest numbers in 6 months. Thank you for joining us. With our top story, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and a group of political leaders have agreed to form a joint command center to mobilize public uprising forces against Taliban militants. The presidential palace said the center will oversee rapid equipment and mobilization of the forces in various parts of Afghanistan. The command center will have key political leaders as its members. The Taliban have seized 6 provincial capitals in less than a week. They are now focused on Mazar-e-Sharif, that's a major city whose collapse gives the militants total control over northern Afghanistan. The fighting has forced thousands of civilians from their homes. Many of them are seeking refuge in the capital, Kabul.
After the fall of 4 key provincial capitals in northern Afghanistan into the hands of Taliban, the militants are now planning to capture Badakhshan, one of the strategic and border provinces in the northeast of Afghanistan. Military commanders say the fall of some provincial capitals in northern Afghanistan makes the battle difficult for government troops in Badakhshan, but Afghan forces will do their best to push back Taliban attacks.
God willing, we as the commando troops promised the residents of Faizabad to protect them against the militants' attacks. We pushed back an overnight attack of the enemy on some entrances of the city. They have suffered heavy casualties and cannot launch another attack soon.
Apart from the risk of disruptive impacts of the surging conflict in Afghanistan, the number of displaced Afghans is rising day by day due to escalation of violence in their home provinces. Since most of displaced Afghans have no access to humanitarian aid, They have called on both the government and the UN to urgently address the need of tens of thousands of families who have been forced to flee their homes.
The recent rise in violence, mainly the collapse of some big cities in northern and southern Afghanistan, has badly damaged the lives of our people. All the collapsed cities are populated areas. Hundreds of thousands of people have so far been displaced while they have no shelter. The world must pay attention to Afghanistan now.
Currently, 18 out of 34 provinces of Afghanistan are the scene of fierce battles between the Taliban and Afghan troops. The Taliban militants have captured four provincial capitals in northern Afghanistan since Sunday. The Afghan president recently said the situation will change in favor of Afghan national security and defense forces in 6 months. This is while Taliban says it's not willing to approve even a ceasefire. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Iran has once again rejected the U.S. and U.K. allegations that the Islamic Republic was behind a recent attack on an Israeli-managed oil tanker off Oman. Iran's deputy permanent representative to the United Nations, Zahra Irshadi, dismissed the accusations as politically motivated and unsubstantiated. She was responding to anti-Iran statements by the U.S. and the U.K. in a Security Council meeting on Monday. Irshadi said there is no verifiable and conclusive evidence to substantiate the accusations, and called them the repetition of fabrications by the Israeli regime. She noted that the regime that has carried out attacks on over 10 commercial vessels in regional waters in the last 2 years cannot whitewash its terrorist acts with such accusations. Irshadi urged the Council to avoid being trapped by the fabrications of the Israeli regime, which as usual are blindly supported by certain Western countries.
Iran has condemned the remarks by European Union officials on the recent attack against an Israeli-owned tanker as irresponsible. Speaking at his online weekly press conference, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh rejected the accusations as baseless, saying blaming Iran is a scenario planned by the Israeli regime and that the comments by EU officials do not contribute to the peace and stability of the region.
Such remarks by EU officials do not contribute to the peace and stability of the region. Tehran has summoned the British and Romanian envoys in Tehran to register protest against the baseless allegations. The fact that Britain has sided with the rebellious and notorious Zionist regime shows the position of this country.
In reaction to a statement released by the G7 against Tehran, the official said the country will not remain silent in the face of the security of its commercial vessels. He further noted that the security of the Persian Gulf is Iran's red line, and that the country has always tried to keep this waterway safe from insecurities created by such countries as UK.
Iran is concerned about the obvious violation that the UK did against an Iranian oil tanker in international waters in July 2019. But the security of the Persian Gulf is the red line for Iran. Tehran has done its best to protect the waterway from insecurities orchestrated by countries like the UK. We advise the British government to pay attention to its own responsibilities and duties.
Tension has been escalating in the region in recent weeks against the backdrop of a suspected drone attack last week that targeted an Israeli-managed tanker, Mercer Street, off the Omani coast. The regime in Tel Aviv and its Western allies, the UK and the US, accuse Iran of orchestrating the attack. Iran has vehemently rejected the charges as baseless and childish. Moreover, Tel Aviv said it is ready to strike Iran in retaliation for the attack. But Iran has already warned of a crushing response to any such move. Iran describes as suspicious a number of reported security incidents in the Persian Gulf region and has warned against any effort to create a vicious atmosphere to pursue certain political goals. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Author and former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman says the U.S. and its allies have so far failed to provide clear proof backing their accusations against Iran. Let's take a listen.
When Iran says, well, fine, let's see some proof that we did this, the United States and its running dogs simply can't manage it. Dominic Raab, the British Foreign Secretary, is a Jew and presumed Zionist, and his counterpart in the United States, Antony Blinken, is also a Jew and presumed Zionist. And they've got their poodles walking along behind them, the rest of the European countries, Germany, France, and so forth. And they don't bother to say, well, where is the proof? It's kind of like a parrot with a mental problem. It's, you know, we have proof, we have proof, we have proof. And when you say, well, show us the proof, all you get back is, we have proof, we have proof, we have proof. So it's very similar to the uproar that the Americans and the British and the Saudis orchestrated when there were attacks on Saudi oil refineries in the Eastern province, and attacks by Yemenis on various Arab installations in Saudi Arabia. And they were always, oh, this is Iran, this is Iran, this is Iran, and denigrating entirely the ability of the Yemenis to fight back against their Saudi oppressors.
A top North Korean official says South Korea and the U.S. will face a more serious security threat by ignoring Pyongyang's repeated warnings against joint military drills. The warning came from Kim Yo-jung, sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. In a statement carried by state news agency, she described the U.S.-South Korea joint war games this week as an unwelcome and self-destructive. She said the exercises threaten North Korean people and raise tensions on the peninsula. South Korea and the U.S. will begin preliminary military drills on Tuesday. North Korea had earlier warned that the exercises would set back progress in improving inter-Korean relations. Jennifer Chang in Seoul says North Korea wants to raise tensions on the Korean Peninsula in response to joint drills by the by the South and the U.S. Here's more.
So now this is alarming the South, which just cannot afford to have tensions rise. The North is a nuclear power, and the South has no nuclear weapons of its own. And it further has problems with its ally, the U.S., which is raising its demands for the cost of the upkeep of the U.S. troops stationed here. So the South is determined never to have any more raising of tensions on the Korean Peninsula, like we saw in 2017 when the North was testing nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of striking the U.S. And now the North is saying, if this type of military drill continues, we are going to raise tensions, meaning there's a possibility they will conduct such drills and tests again.
The rapidly spreading Delta variant of COVID-19 across the United States has pushed the country's cases and hospitalizations to a six-month high. Infections in the U.S. have averaged 100,000 for 3 days in a row. The number shows a 35% increase over the past week. Based on the population, the states of Louisiana, Florida, and Arkansas reported the most new cases in the past week. The United States remains the world's hardest hit country by the pandemic, with nearly 36 million cases and over 617,000 deaths. Meanwhile, Brazil reported more than 12,000 new infections and over 400 deaths on Monday, bringing its overall cases to more than 20 million and the death toll to over 563,000. Colin Campbell says the rate of infections in more conservative U.S. states is much higher than the rest of the country. Listen.
But what's interesting is you can almost see a direct state-by-state connection between red states, meaning those who have conservative leaders and those who tend to vote in a more conservative way. And with that kind of ideology and culture, it has been somewhat anti-vaxxer, anti-mask wearing. And we're seeing those numbers explode in those various states. In the states where health officials have really encouraged the use of masks, encouraged vaccinations, which tend to be a bit more liberal, we're not seeing the explosion of the outbreaks that we are in the other states. However, one of the states like California, Governor Gavin Newsom there, has changed some of the rules that people have been living by in the past few months, advocating for the use of masks indoors to try to stem the spread of the disease. We're not seeing this in other states where people are heavily affected, but now people are starting to consider whether or not there should be future lockdowns or stricter quarantining rules because of the rapid spread of the virus.
Hundreds of Greek citizens have gathered outside Parliament in the capital, Athens, to protest the government's handling of wildfires raging across the country.
Hey! 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 Hey!
demonstrators criticized authorities for a lack of funding for special firefighting units, vehicles, and resources. The crowd that included members of leftist and environmental organizations also slammed the government for its unfavorable policies toward the environment. In the meantime, Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis has apologized for what he called the weaknesses in responding to wildfires on the island of Evia.
The extent of the destruction, especially in Evia and Attica, blackens all of our hearts, and I'm the first one to apologize for whatever weaknesses existed. I completely understand the pain of our citizens, who saw their houses and property burning, the upheaval of having to abruptly leave their homes.
Mitsotakis said his country is facing a natural disaster of unprecedented dimensions. He pledged that the citizens who have lost their homes and property will be compensated and the burned areas will be reforested. Greek authorities are currently dealing with over 580 wildfires across the country amid soaring heat and dry conditions. The blazes on the island of Evia have destroyed several homes and businesses and forced thousands to flee to safety by sea. The UK government is deporting another group of people of Jamaican descent to the Caribbean country. The move has caused an outcry among migrant rights advocates who say the move is unfair and politically motivated. Our London correspondent Said Pourreza leads us up.
Another episode in the British government's harsh immigration policy. A deportation flight planned for August 11th. On board, 19 people of Jamaican origins. In this country for up to 30 years now.
The UK Home Office, responsible for immigration, has called those deportees foreign offenders, people who have come here and committed crimes and should expect to be removed.
But immigrant rights groups such as the Movement for Justice say the move is a reversal of an earlier agreement between the UK and Jamaican governments not to deport people who arrived in the UK as minors.
These are not people who should be deported. I deal very often with people who have lived in the country as children or who have lived here for a very, very long time or have been convicted of offences that aren't at the most serious end of the offences. So I have seen people for low-level drug dealing, not necessarily condoning it, but it is low-level drug dealing. There's all sorts of ideological and expert, you know, sort of, I suppose, societal issues, why that sometimes happens to people.
Some are believed to be relatives of the Windrush generation, citizens of the British Empire who traveled to Britain between 1948 and 1973 after the government called on its colonies to send workers to help rebuild the country after World War II.
They came in the 1950s, have really gotten the short end of the stick. And remember, their ancestors have already been through slavery and colonialism and neo-colonialism and governorships and all sorts of awful systems that has always put them as second-class citizens. Then they came here and they were treated as second-class citizens. We've seen that with the Windrush scandal, and it is their children and grandchildren who are now being shackled and put on those planes. It's, you know, a further denigration of their rights.
Last year, 50 Britons of Jamaican descent were also forcibly removed. Many grew up in the UK. The hashtag Jamaica50 is still remembered.
People watching, see the way that this government holds in such disrespect the contribution of West Indian, Caribbean, and black people in this country. When will black lives matter once again?
The British government claims the deportations are everything to do with public safety or protecting victims. But rights campaigners disagree. They say the move is purely racist and political, made by a failing government appealing desperately to its racist base. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Well, that's your war news for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless Thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
What do we learn from Imam Hussein's movement? In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate.
Hello, dear listeners, and our heartfelt condolences to you all on the advent of the month of mourning. Today is the first day of the month of Muharram, and consequently the beginning of the new lunar year, 1443 Hijri year, exactly 1,382 years since the great tragedy that afflicted the blessed household of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Before we present a special program in this regard, let us ponder on Ayah 169 of Surah Al-Imran of the Holy Quran, which says, "And think not of those who are slain in Allah's way as dead. Nay, they are alive, and by their Lord well provided." This divine description of those who achieve immortality by defeating death through courting martyrdom in the way of the Almighty Creator and in defense of humanitarian values, although a frequent occurrence in history, was brilliantly displayed only once in the long life of this world. It was in the year 61 AH, corresponding to 680 AD, in the plain of Karbala in Iraq. Besides the fresh flowing waters of the river Euphrates, that Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and his thirsty group, which included a six-month-old infant, preferred immortal martyrdom in an equal combat rather than pay allegiance to the libertine rule of a tyrant. The grandson of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger thus taught humanity how to live a life of dignity and how to overcome death in order to strengthen personal faith and to salvage the faith of the people and society. I do not wish a death for myself other than martyrdom, while life among the unjust would be unbearable. These words of the immortal martyr of Karbala continue to inspire us, reaching climax in the month of Muharram, the anniversary of his martyrdom, which we commemorate with fervor every year, irrespective of the circumstances, including the current spread of the coronavirus pandemic worldwide. Of course, with due precautions and in full accordance with the advice of the medical and religious experts. As we said earlier, today starts the month of Muharram with its memories of the greatest tragedy that the world has ever seen and will never see the like of it in future. It is the month when blood, including that of a six-month-old baby, triumphed over sharpened swords. It is the month which each year jolts human conscience and reminds mankind of its duties towards religion and society. The first of the month of Muharram is thus not a day of celebration, as is unfortunately done in some Arab countries, which seem oblivious to the great sacrifice of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. These frivolities are nothing but plots to distance Muslims from the essence of Islam, as preached by the Prophet's blessed household, the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, and guarded by their sacred blood. Such celebrations on the pretext of the start of the so-called New Year are nothing but practices of the pre-Islamic days of Jahiliyyah, in view of the fact that the Prophet's auspicious migration from Mecca to Medina was not on the eve of Muharram, as the ignorant assume, but on the eve of Rabiul Awwal. It is an undeniable historical fact that a decade after the passing away of the Prophet, when the Islamic calendar was fixed on the basis of his migration, instead of the first of Rabiul Awal, the first of Muharram, or beginning of the pre-Islamic Jahiliyyah year, was unfortunately chosen by the second caliph. Islam means adherence to the letter and spirit of the Holy Quran, coupled with love, affection, and obedience to the Prophet's Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them. Islam means resistance against oppressors and readiness to court martyrdom for the defense of humanitarian values, as taught us by Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. This is the message of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. This is what the grandson of Prophet of Islam stood for and drank the cup of martyrdom so that humanity could have a worthy model to follow in every age and climb against the forces of oppression and exploitation. With the start of the month of Muharram, the blood of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, becomes fresh as the hearts of the faithful turn towards Karbala in Iraq, the rendezvous of martyrs, where the hypocrisy of the godless Umayyads was unmasked to show them in their true pagan Arab colors. In other words, Muharram is a time for reflection for Muslims, and the best way of pondering on facts are the mourning ceremonies for Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and the martyrs of Karbala that could indeed be called part of the Prophet's Sunnah wa Sirah, or practice and behavior. This is the message of Muharram, the month of the life-inspiring mourning ceremonies. Prophet's grandson courted martyrdom along with his male family members and friends in Karbala in order to establish social justice and preserve humanitarian values by unmasking hypocrisy. Therefore, the Islamic Republic of Iran, which adheres to the path of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, strives to take every step to ensure the smooth functioning of the country, since it is irreligious to indulge in outward modes of worship while ignoring social, cultural, political, and other issues that govern human life. Likewise, it is self-deception to ignore the divine law and give free rein to whimsical ideas of the fallible mind, thereby allowing the fate of the people to slip into a state of injustice, which in turn provides breeding ground for misrule. The Islamic Republic of Iran shoulders the responsibility of conveying to the world the message of Islam at a time when the United States and the Israeli regime are trying to destabilize Muslim countries by pitting Muslims against one another. Islam also does not allow Muslims to shed the blood of fellow Muslims, as the Takfiris and other deviated groups practice today by massacring Muslims. This is surely not what was taught to us by the Messenger of Mercy. Muharram is the month that jolts human conscience to expose the roots of terrorism, which nowadays is trying to tarnish the humanitarian image of Islam. In other words, Muharram and its life-inspiring mourning ceremonies are considered a catalyst for triumph of truth over falsehood. The Islamic Republic of Iran has always played an important role in this regard, much to the chagrin of its enemies, especially the United States and the illegal Zionist regime. In view of these facts, because of the coronavirus pandemic sweeping across Iran and the world, the Muharram gatherings will strictly follow the rules and regulations set by medical experts, in conformity with the religious authorities. By maintaining proper social distancing, sanitization measures, wearing of face masks, and checking of temperatures and oxygen levels of the devotees visiting the Husseiniyas and mosques. Like last year, another important feature this year will be the online morning assemblies in order to prevent crowding and to facilitate the spread of the message of Muharram to homes through computers and televisions.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The first Thursday of August, Sayyed Ibrahim Raisi was inaugurated as Iran's eighth president, marking a new chapter in the history of the Islamic Republic. The 60-year-old president has already signaled that he would continue talks to restore the country's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers from which the U.S. unilaterally withdrew 3 years ago. In fact, he inherited a moribund deal. Many observers hope to be resurrected much sooner. Many, but not Press TV. A sixth round of negotiations with the Iran nuclear deal signatories in the Austrian capital ended in June, after which Iran signaled that talks can only continue after Mr. Raisi assumes office. After so many talks, now it's become clear for everyone that both Tehran's and Washington's demands are at direct odds, and both may need to make major compromises for the talks to lead to an agreement again.
We still have serious differences with Iran with regard to returning to mutual compliance with the JCPOA. Our teams are going back for a seventh round of indirect negotiations in the coming days. We'll see if we can bridge the differences, but they're real, and we have to be able to bridge them.
And that's the trajectory Press TV had already projected, even when politicians had high hopes for the deal after Joe Biden took office in the United States. So on January 20th, 2021, the inauguration day of Joe Biden, then-Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called on the incoming U.S. administration to come back to the 2015 nuclear agreement and lift sanctions on Tehran as part of the Americans' commitments under the deal. With Biden in the White House, new rounds of talks kick-started in Vienna. The sticking point was now which side had to revive the nuclear agreement. Tehran demanded Washington first lift sanctions, as it was Washington that had withdrawn from the deal, and Washington called on Tehran to first resume compliance with the deal. The new rounds of talks, however, brought in some fresh blood. The aim was reaching an agreement in 2 months.
We are closer to a deal than any time in the past, but it doesn't mean that we are there. The remaining job is still difficult and needs lots of, you know, efforts and you know, further talks. So we decided to cut negotiations here, go back home, not only for consultations, but this time for decision making.
While top diplomats promised quick progress in the negotiations, Press TV's informed source had another story to tell. It was too naive to assume hurdles would be removed just in the absence of the anti-Iranian president Donald Trump. And more importantly, the issue was not just about who had to take the first step. On April 21st, briefing with a senior State Department official on U.S. engagement in Vienna regarding the Iran nuclear deal was hardly more than what the informed source had already told Press TV. According to the senior State Department official, there are still disagreements and in some cases pretty important ones on our respective views about what is required to, what is meant by a return to full compliance. The official added, and the distance that remains to be travelled is greater than the distance that we've travelled so far. So we're not near the conclusion of these negotiations. The outcome is still uncertain. The Biden administration said it couldn't remove the sanctions the U.S. had to remove under the Iran deal and needed to review each and every one from scratch. In other words, after all direct and indirect talks, the two sides were back to square one as the American side insisted on sequencing the removal of sanctions and the Iranian side insisted on the removal of all sanctions at once. Just before the briefing with a senior State Department official, the informed source had told Press TV that only the removal of all sanctions together against Iran would save the Vienna talks. It is not acceptable to Iran to divide the sanctions into removable, non-removable, and negotiable. In Tehran, nothing will be accepted but the removal of all sanctions, including those related to the JCPOA, reimposed and relabeled during the Trump era, according to the informed source. Despite campaign promises made by now US President Joe Biden to return to the deal, Washington's return to the deal has stalled, predicted by Press TV since almost the very beginning. Back then, Press TV's stance was almost contrary to what other major media outlets would take. For example, in February 2021, AP reported in its article, Biden repudiates Trump on Iran, ready for talks on nuke deal, that the Biden administration says it's ready to join talks with Iran and world powers to discuss a return to the 2015 nuclear deal in a sharp repudiation of former President Donald Trump's maximum pressure campaign that sought to isolate the Islamic Republic. Despite Biden's apparent attempts to distinguish his administration from Trump's, his promise to return to the deal was conditional, requiring Iran to recommit to the deal's conditions before the U.S. lifts sanctions, and only after additional conditions are discussed. And until then, sanctions and other mechanisms of political pressure will be applied to Tehran. In other words, Biden's policy is exactly the same policy pursued by the Trump administration. It's become crystal clear why the leader of the Islamic Republic has always warned of the Americans' unreliability. It is worth repeating that a 2009 policy paper produced by the Brookings Institution titled Which Path to Persia? Options for a New American Strategy Toward Iran detailed plans to lure Iran in with a deal related to its nuclear technology, accuse Iran of rejecting it, and thus serving as a pretext for further U.S. aggression. The paper laid out how the U.S. could appear to the world as a peacemaker and depict Iran's betrayal of a very good deal as the pretext for an otherwise reluctant U.S. military response.
We have recently heard, including in this meeting, discouraging statements from a few council members pointing their fingers at the victim instead of demanding the culprit to act responsibly. They have deliberately ignored the fact that Iran's steps in ceasing implementation of some of its commitments are remedial in nature. They have called on Iran to come to full compliance with its JCPOA commitments as if it was Iran that withdrew from the JCPOA, as if it was Iran that reimposed or introduced countless inhumane sanctions with the publicly declared objective of starving an entire nation, as if it was Iran that brazenly threatened all states either to violate Resolution 2231 or face punishment, as if it was Iran that pursued maximum pressure policy, and as if it was Iran that made every attempt to kill the JCPOA and Resolution 2231 forever.
In 2009, when these words were originally published, it might have been difficult to imagine just how literally and overtly the U.S. would attempt to implement this ploy against Iran. Yet with hindsight, it is clear that the Obama administration offered this deal to Iran with full knowledge it would be betrayed in the near future, and was under Trump, with attempts to sabotage the deal further clearly underway by the Biden administration. While White House occupants have changed three times now, the belligerent U.S. policy towards Iran has been a fixture and faithfully pursued for over a decade now. And for over a decade now, Press TV, as an informed, knowledgeable observer, has been exposing the Americans' dishonesty, hypocrisy, and double standards, not only in the Iran nuclear deal, but over a wide range of other issues the Americans have disgracefully been involved in.
In the limelight.
Claire Mosley, the founder of Care for Calais, said, targeting vulnerable asylum seekers is an act of extreme cowardice. UK government must support people seeking asylum to integrate into our communities rather than putting them in places like Napier barracks or large hotels. We'll prepare for you an article written jointly by Diane Taylor and Mark Townsend. The piece is titled UK Home Office Records 70 Racist Incidents by Far Right at Asylum Accommodation. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. According to a Freedom of Information response obtained by The Guardian, the UK Home Office has recorded 70 racist incidents by far-right supporters against asylum seekers in barracks and hotel accommodation. However, campaigners supporting asylum seekers in such accommodation say the figure is a significant underestimation of the true picture. The data, which covers 1st of January 2020 until 13th of July this year, involves incidents in the much maligned Napier and Penally barracks, which have been under intense scrutiny by MPs after their untenable conditions were revealed, as well as a large-scale COVID outbreak in the former. Penally barracks in Pembrokeshire, Wales was closed in March, despite only being opened in September of 2020, along with Napier in Folkestone, Kent. Hotels have been used throughout the period, but their use for asylum seekers increased sharply after the start of the COVID pandemic in March of 2020. In Napier barracks, four incidents were recorded between September and December of 2020, with 12 occurring so far this year. This is despite the barracks being temporarily emptied in April after the coronavirus outbreak. There are now thought to be 176 asylum seekers living there. Several incidents at Penally Barracks was reported to the Home Office last year, and many in 2021. Witness statements from legal challengers by asylum seekers living there reveal a catalogue of disturbing episodes, including an attempt to ram a refugee with a car. Others include stones and bottles being thrown, rape threats, attempts to start fights, fireworks shot through the gate, and eggings. According to witness statements, a farm shop in the area said some of the far-right supporters had asked to buy pigeon scarers to mimic the sound of gunfire and frighten asylum seekers. The number of incidents recorded in hotels has tripled this year, with 40 examples reported, up from 13 last year. On Saturday, 7th of August, the far-right organisation Britain First posted a video on its website headlined "Britain First Exposes an Illegal Immigrant Hotel in Hull," in which members of the organisation say they posed as journalists to confront asylum seekers. One asylum seeker from Yemen experienced two incidents involving far-right protesters at his Home Office-provided hotel on the outskirts of London. He said, "They were driving around the hotel recording us on video," adding, "They were insulting us, swearing at us, and screaming things like, 'Go out from our country. Why are you eating our food? Go away from us. You are strangers here.' We were too scared to go outside the hotel and felt like it was a prison. We had to stay inside." He added, "We fled countries where there is war and destruction and felt safe when we arrived here. But when we saw this kind of racist attack, we felt we were not protected." Maddie Harris of Humans for Rights Network said, "Ghettoizing people seeking safety in large-scale accommodations such as hotels and army barracks exposes them to harm. The figures shown here are not an accurate representation of the level of racial abuse endured by the people we support. We have had numerous conversations with asylum seekers where they have told us how unsafe they feel due to frequent incidents of racial abuse and that they have experienced in and around these accommodations." Claire Mosley, the founder of Care for Calais, said, "Targeting vulnerable asylum seekers is an act of extreme cowardice. Our government must support people seeking asylum to integrate into our communities rather than putting them in places like Napier barracks or large hotels." The Home Office spokesperson said, "It is unacceptable for anyone in asylum accommodation to experience hostile or racist incidents, and we ensure each incident is thoroughly investigated. We work closely with a range of organizations to ensure immediate support and assistance is provided to people living in the accommodation, and if needed, escalate to law enforcement." Meanwhile, European citizens who have applied for settled status are being detained and threatened with deportation, a development that contradicts assurances from ministers and appears to contravene the Brexit withdrawal agreement. The Home Office has served European Union nationals with removal directions, even though they could prove they had applied for settled status, which should protect their rights to remain in the United Kingdom. Ministers have repeatedly promised that anyone who had applied by the 30th of June deadline would have their existing rights protected while their case was being heard. The apparent failure to honour the agreement has prompted accusations of either administrative incompetence by the Home Office officials or a willful attempt to deport as many European Union nationals as possible, on the assumption they're easier to remove, for instance, than asylum seekers. A letter from the legal charity Bail for Immigration Detainees to the head of Immigration Enforcement, dated 29th of July, raises concerns over the Home Office's failure to acknowledge receipt of settled status applications in cases where it wants to deport European Union citizens. Bail for Immigration Detainees says that unless a meaningful response is received from the Home Office, it will make an official complaint to the European Commission. Lawyers argue it marks an important battle to protect the rights of European Union nationals following Brexit. They warn that the failure to acknowledge applications could potentially affect thousands of individuals. Recently, an EU citizen from the Home Office wanted to deport and who had been detained in an immigration removal centre secured their release on bail after a judge accepted that they could not be removed because they had made an European Union Settlement Scheme application. Even so, the Home Office still contested their release and offered no apology or explanation why it had earlier argued there was no evidence of the application at a previous hearing and therefore could deport them. Speaking shortly after being released, the European Union national who requested anonymity told The Observer, "They're trying to play with mine and my family's lives and it's not fair. I'm supposed to have rights." Pierre McClough, legal director of Bail for Immigration Detainees, said, "It seems that the Home Office has pre-decided the fate of certain European Union nationals, perhaps believing that they're easy to remove. But in its drive to deport more people, it is sidestepping legal requirements and legal procedures. The issue appears to relate mostly to applications sent by post instead of being forwarded digitally." Aranea Kogolathos, a barrister and legal manager of BIDS EEA, European Economic Area Project, said, "Paper applications were used by many vulnerable and marginalized people, including the elderly and those in detention or prison, who found it difficult to access computer or didn't have access to a valid identity document. The numbers affected could be significant. For instance, out of 1,500 inmates at Wandsworth Prison in South London, almost 500 are believed to be European Union nationals." Barrister Aranea Kogolathos said, "Despite having made the European Union Settlement Scheme applications, European Economic Area nationals are being deprived of their liberty and even served with removal directions, both of which they are forced to challenge despite limited access to legal advice and legal representation."
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamadi.
Islamadi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Salam alaikum to you, Brother Habib.
Welcome, dear listeners. Welcome to Youth Station. You guys are listening to Brother Habib and his most favorite co-host, Brother Muafi. Brother Muafi, salam alaikum.
Yeah, salam alaikum.
Thank you for coming, Brother
Rahim. And thank you very much for inviting me.
We're still living in the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's affected us in all different, you know, all our life aspects. You know, even school, again, there's this talk here that it's going to be also online. Some people may argue that they have their children at home. It's also a chance to sit down with the children, especially, you know, with the time havoc that we have during these days, this generation, this era, where you're, all your time is based on work. And when you come back to work, you want to just sit down alone and you want to relax a little bit.
Yes.
Now you have your time to sit down with your children. Some jobs are giving pay.
You can have quality time with your family.
Yeah, but there are also...
And take advantage of this privacy.
Yeah.
This privacy is very important for human beings. All of human beings. Yeah.
And, of course, I, me personally, I had my personal experience with the corona. When it first came...